pull it close to us like this? And maybe.
Good afternoon. As you can see, this is the seminar, Tableware 2024, Where is Business Going? To answer that question, Lori Burns, a worldwide tabletop expert and leader of Burns Consulting, Paul Yeomans, publisher of the United Kingdom's Tableware International, Martha Nading, the owner of The Extra Ingredient, will all take you through what's happening in the Tableware Center, including who can be considered leaders, where and how is tableware getting sold today, what are the shifts and opportunities for suppliers. From the retail perspective, they'll discuss how and what retailers are buying, what is selling, how and how vendors are working, and with them in a fast-paced changing marketplace where the next generation is deciding what tableware to begin purchasing. So after that, Lori.
Good afternoon, I'm Lori Burns. I'm not sure why you introduced me first, but that's okay. Paul's gonna start for us today, and we hope you enjoy it.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Paul Yeomans. I'm the Publishing Director of Tableware International. I'm joined today by someone who knows the tabletop business more than anyone I know, my dear friend Lori Burns, and we're joined by the wonderful Martha Nading, owner of the wonderful retail store, The Extra Ingredient, based in Greensboro, North Carolina. We are delighted to welcome you here to talk all things tabletop. I flew in from London yesterday and always look forward to visiting the Inspired Home Show, and not just because I love Chicago. At Tableware International, we work with all major tableware manufacturers and brands from all over the world. What is clear today that despite the global challenges, and there are many, people want to do business with the US more than ever. The potential is huge, the market is welcoming. That's why I really love Chicago, because the possibilities here are endless for all of us. Now, I'm going to tear this up because I was going to go into something, but I want to start off with something fun. Martha, what tableware do you use at home?
Right now in my house, there is a huge collection. I have Denby tableware. I have Vietri tableware. I have some fine china. Some of it was inherited. Some of it was purchased. Trying to think, what else do I use? I have cheap wine glasses. I have expensive crystal. So it's a across the board collection.
Wonderful selection. Wonderful. Lori?
Oh, wow. I have a lot of tableware. I think my favorite thing that I use every day was designed by Gio Ponti in 1929 for Sambonet, my flatware.
Wow. Yep.
I hold that and put it in my mouth at every meal, and it's awesome. For tableware, I have Picard, which their factory is right here in Chicago, in Antioch, Illinois. I have Jars, which is from France, yep, that I use a lot, and Royal Copenhagen.
Oh, I have some of that, too. I forgot that
one.
That's a very good selection.
And none of my wine glasses match because my friends use them and break them, so I have a plethora.
And does anyone in the audience want to tell us what tableware they're using at the moment? Jason, you're right at the front. Rosenthal, great choice. Please.
I'm a mom of three young children, so anything that's not breakable and that is, I'm also in the regulatory industry,
yep.
So it's PFAS free. I'm looking at sustainability,
yes.
I'm looking at my children, and then looking at reducing plastics in my life, so
yep.
That direction.
And how are your children in terms of dining at the table? Do they get the concept? Yeah. That's great. No, it's honestly, it's brilliant. I love it. Well, we're going to start by looking into manufacturing. One of the things that's quite a hot topic at the moment is that sort of the tableware that's produced in China, which there's a hell of a lot of it, and a lot of it is very good quality. So we did a couple of interviews with some very well-known manufacturers. One in Sri Lanka, which is Dankotur Porcelain. And the question was really on, are you seeing a China plus one scenario where brands are moving their manufacturing out of China and sourcing from the likes of you. And you'll see from the answer there, the Dan Couture have replied with, in their opinion, it's quality variation. Supplies from Chinese manufacturers varies in quality from shipment to shipment. That means some of it's great, some of it not so. Thus, customers are worried of receiving inconsistent quality. Trade concessions between EU and other Asian countries attracts EU and US buyers. Sailing time and increasing freight costs are other factors to move away from China and source from Southeast Asia. Then we asked a metalware factory based in India who makes for an awful lot of people. And the quote that, I mean, I could read you an essay which has been written, which is very good. But the quote that I like is, China plus one will no longer be a business strategy, but a survival necessity. I'll list a couple of things here. It's that this company, Ciba Industries, have mentioned. One is the rising costs in China, the trade tensions, especially with the US, and corresponding duty impact, significant disruptions in the supply chain because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and companies don't want to be over-dependent on a single source. But that also leads to challenges with the countries such as India, who are looking to tap into this market as such. The infrastructure and development, including transportation, logistics, and power supply, needs to be there. Skill development and technology adaption to meet the demands of modern manufacturing. Further, streamlining bureaucratic processes and reducing red tape, supportive government policies with right incentives for manufacturing and exports. The point is the potential is huge, but this is never going to be done overnight, but this is a trend that we're seeing with certain tableware brands. Sort of, they're not necessarily all coming out of China, but they are moving some production away.
I'd like to just add into that. The reason is, you know, we've seen that maybe China's not a strategic sole partner for trading with tensions that they have with Taiwan and with tariffs. But what that means for you, if you're bringing in tableware, you're selling it, that your manufacturers are shoring up operations so that you have product. If it's not from one country, it's from another, that they're looking after you to get the quality that you need at the price that you need so that you can get your margins if you're a retailer.
Right. We want to move forward into, that's the manufacturing side, and we're going to look at what's actually trending worldwide. I'll look in the global market, and Laurie will touch on the US market. So this is trends that we've seen personally after visiting shows such as Paris and Frankfurt in the last couple of months. Coloured glassware definitely is a trend, I think, here in the US too. I mean, that's a beautiful image up there, I think, for Artel. Absolutely lovely. Fluted glassware is something that we're seeing trending in a big time. It continues to be a chic option for savvy buyers. It's never been not on trend, but it's particularly popular with the buying public recently, and glassmakers certainly are delivering. Texture on the table. Textured tabletop has been growing in popularity for a very long time now, but in the past number of years, it has really become interesting and is filtering down to the buying public. Obviously, where hospitality leads, retail follows.
Next slide.
Blue and white. Think sun, sea, sand, Greek holiday vibes meets classic English Delft meets the Ming Dynasty. Blue and white tableware is such an industry stalwart, and it's enjoying a lot of resurgence in popularity. Spode recently launched Blue Staccato, which is such a lovely collection, and of course, there is the famed Italian blue, also from Spode. Porcel has also come really fun with white collections. We love Atlantico, for example, with which has some really fun blue and white collections. And Burley's Blue Arden is a really familiar pattern supporting the trend. Narumi's Milano is a much refined collection suitable for afternoon tea and the likes. Next slide, please. Thanks. The other trends we've seen from Frankfurt, tableware with metallic and gold rims. If you look, the plate in the image there is from a German brand called Nymphenburg. This actually won the Tableware International Awards of Excellence Fine Dinnerware category. The scores this product received were really very, very high. Not necessarily from a huge brand, but the design was just off the wall, and our judges went crazy for this one. Flatware, Asian-inspired flatware, bamboo, wood, and colored handles. The image on the left is from a French brand called Cap Deco. Beautiful, small French producer who produces flatware in a very sophisticated way. The image in the middle is actually from Amifa. I really love this product. It may be here at the show. Again, it's very sort of inspiring design. And again, it's scored very highly in the Tableware International Awards of Excellence. Another trend we are seeing is mixed materials. On the right-hand side is a beautiful decanter from Zuisel glass. We actually featured this on the front cover of Tableware International. Again, it's probably here at the show on the Fortessa stand, but it's so inspiring, so beautiful. I mean, so many people have mentioned this product to me in the last couple of months, and we're really excited about it. But that's, again, something that's really trending, and the design concept is absolutely amazing.
Anything you'd like to add, Laurie, on that? Sorry.
No, I think, Paul, that's true. And if you've been to the European shows or if you're thinking about going, you often see things in Europe that never make it to America. Maybe it's 7 years, but maybe it comes straight across because things are speeding up. So, yeah, love it.
Great.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi.
Yes. You can see it, and if you go on, I can give you a list of 5 flatware websites, and you'll find chopsticks from Christoffel to, yeah. Thank you, Elaine. Oh, the question was, Elaine saw a lot of chopsticks in flatware brands, and is it something that we were seeing? I apologize if you guys didn't hear that. Yeah. And the answer is yes.
I should also point out one of the trends that we're also seeing from Ambiente as well is a lot of Asian-inspired flatware, an awful lot, and it's really sophisticated, it's really cool, and it's something that you want to have in your home, you know, really.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump in and talk about what's going on in America, and I do believe we always have to look forward so that we can plan product for the next generation so that the current generations will also buy it. If we design things for ourselves, our children may or may not buy it. And before I do that, I always like to take a quick walk down memory lane, so please bear with me and walk with me. When tableware brands first came to America, when China was discovered and the Germans wanted to make this product in the West, the first factory was founded in 1710, and that's Meissen. So I wanted to put some logos of some companies that it's the name of their company, it's the name of their brand, and they've been around for years. You do see America, you see Picard, you see Lennox, no longer made in America, but it was until COVID, and you see Oneida, which is named after the American Indian tribe, the Oneida tribe in upstate New York, was always made there. It's made abroad. Libby Glass, America. So you see these brands from 200 and 300 years. And fast forward to the 1900s, and we have some younger tabletop brands. Two of these are factories. The rest of them are brands, by the way. And I have some secret contests if anyone wants to come and talk with me afterwards. But I hope you recognize some of these. Gibson and 10 Strawberry Street are in the show today. I think Certified might be. But yeah. And then, you know, the Warby Parkers of the world, the disruptors that started online, and then maybe it didn't work, and they needed to get into retail. And I just wanted to bring these up. And a couple of them on the right, Estelle Colored Glass came up during COVID, beautiful colors online, and she's in stores. She has sales reps now, and she's got a complete program for stores and online. leeway in the bottom. I think that's so fun. This is two guys that used to do the licensing for Vera Wang's tabletop collection at Wedgwood, and they wanted to get into tabletop. And you know, remember that box of dishes you would get at Walmart, and it had four or five piece place settings? They don't call it that. This is your starter pack. You might have a starter pack plus serving dishes. So they gave it a whole new name, and they just gave you what you needed. And they've done pop-ups in Bloomingdale's. They're doing shows in upstate New York and farmy type places. But all of these companies, if you want to go on, you'll see them online, and you'll see partnerships they're doing, because really brick and mortar, like Warby Parker found out, is kind of how you can establish your brand. None of these are factories. Did you have something to add?
I was going to say, do you have a favorite there, Lori?
Probably Hand. I think they're doing a really great things with shapes and organic, and I don't know, I kind of like them. I like the feel. How about you?
I would say Estelle Colored Glass. I love Estelle Colored Glass.
Okay, I like to look at it, but I don't like to drink out of it. So no? I challenge everybody to try that. It's a little thick for me. Yeah.
Oh, I really like it.
So I own some of the Hand and also some East Fork.
Okay.
And both of those were introduced to me by my younger children who were in their 30s. Neither one of them are brands that I have sold, but I certainly do enjoy using them.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
That's great. So moving forward, where do Americans dine? I purposely chose this guy on sitting on a rock with a Stanley Cup, because that's like, that might have a milkshake in it, I don't know. But we dine in the dining room, in the kitchen, at an open kitchen bar, like the gentleman having his breakfast with his computer. We eat outside, and we eat on the go. So we really have to think about our lifestyle right now and what tableware will serve us. How do we dine? Well, it varies. In 2008, I used to live in Hong Kong and in Thailand, and I sourced a lot of tableware out there for a lot of brands, and I do that now for others. When I moved to America in 2008, it was 18 and 82. And in the time that I've been back in America, we've lost 10% of the formal dining. So it doesn't mean we're not doing it. It doesn't mean that's a great niche. I will tell you, the picture on the left is from one of my favorite stores. It's in Palm Beach, Florida. That's Mary Mahoney. If you don't know her store, she has, go there and have fun with your eyes. On the right, everything is melamine and plastic.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Look at it.
And that's from Crate and Barrel.
Do you think, say, these days, are they calling casual and formal everyday and entertaining, or is it still casual and formal here?
I think our generation says casual and formal. I'm going to talk about the bowl in a slide coming up, and like my children go get food. I go for Italian, or I'm eating at home, or I get Chinese, but my children go get food, and that's talking about chopsticks, Elaine, and the bowl. So what about your kids? Martha, do they have formal, do they say these words?
My kids do not set formal dinners, never. They never do that, but they expect it at my house.
Okay.
They grew up with it, and so they're used to it. So when it's a holiday or when they're home, that's what they want. It's very, very interesting. So I'm going to see what happens as their families grow and they don't have young children as you do, whether they get back into formal eating or setting a table. My older son sits at the TV tray in front of mostly sports, and that's how he eats. So there's very, very little setting a table.
Right.
But his wife likes to go in the dining room and have a tablescape set up all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because she likes to go in and look at it, but she doesn't necessarily eat there.
That is great.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. In our house, we tend to eat in the kitchen an awful lot. Always, you know, on the kitchen island where the television is never on, sort of thing. That will change. My son's 7, so by the time he's 13, I'm sure it'll be on all the time. But yeah, it's special occasions. Sundays, we set a table.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Stuff like that. So yeah.
So traditions.
I was just going to add, I have a friend who during COVID was stuck at home eating, as we all were stuck at home eating. And so she decided that every Sunday evening, they would sit in their dining room They would use their formal dinnerware. It was something that had been packed away. She didn't use it very much, so they did it every single Sunday evening. She started out, and it was just her family. But now COVID is past us, thank goodness. And she has continued to do this on a Sunday evening. And she said she put her dishes away because they couldn't go in the dishwasher, so she didn't want to have to use them all the time. But one meal a week, she can easily hand wash. And so I thought that was kind of cool that she got back into some formal dining.
Love it. Love it. I'm going to talk about trends now, and I'm going to go into color and different materials and things like that to try to do that fairly quickly. I don't know if you guys realize, but after World War I, America was in a pretty deep, sad time. And the Homer Lachlan Company in Newell, West Virginia, had a very famous pattern designer there. And he designed what we know as fiesta wear. And he thought we needed a pick-me-up. And I think we're experiencing the fiesta effect right now after COVID. This is a picture of pre-war fiesta wear. They don't make those colors anymore. They hold those as pre-war colors. But I feel as you walk the show, you're seeing color. If you're in Central Park, people in New York are wearing color, not just black. Like it's the fiesta effect that's hitting us. We need to feel better after COVID. Couple of hot products that I've seen. The flatware that you see is made by Mepra. That's in the northern part of Italy. They do it in a lot of colors. I picked yellow because I'm seeing a lot of yellow for spring. I'm seeing it in fashion right now, and home fashion will follow that very quickly. I picked this glass that was just introduced in January by Vietri. The colors are so vibrant. The glass is that hand-hammered feel that Paul was talking about that he showed you from Paris. And I just love that they were bold enough to put three colors on one glass, the stem, the base, and the bowl. It's
very brave.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. And Martha, how much is that glass retailing for?
You know, I'm sorry.
I feel like it's $48 for
one.
I
want to say around 50.
Okay.
It's not the most expensive that they have, but it's neither is it the cheapest.
The other thing as well, to touch on the fiesta effect, that pattern there, the colors, so that was between 1936 and 1937?
Correct.
I mean, for that time, how revolutionary was that?
It was huge. We didn't even speak other languages. This guy looked up the word party in other languages and found Spanish and called it fiesta. Like, the story's pretty amazing. But I feel fiesta in my life right now, and it's the world revolves around dinnerware, trust me. So I'm showing some color here that's really fun. I put a safe picture there on the left, and that is Crate and Barrel, because you know, when we're not sure, we can be safe. We can have white. What you see in these colors, so this lady getting her hair done, that's Wedgwood Florentine. Florentine turquoise was their best-selling pattern, but none of these have been made since 1981, and it is flooding Bloomingdale's floor right now on 59th Street.
This campaign is brilliant, actually. If you can check it out on Instagram or whatever, it's really, really good.
Yeah. Then you have the stack in the middle. That's Richard Ginori. That's Oriental Italian, I think it's called. They've hired Jake Gyllenhaal to promote that. That is very expensive. You can get it with gold or not. It's hand-painted in Italy, and they are delivering, and it is flying out the door of luxury stores. But you can get it without gold. Top right, largest retailer in the world, Walmart. That is Pioneer Woman for Walmart. I just wanted to put that in there because it's so colorful. If you guys haven't been to Walmart lately, she's got 50% of the tableware area right now.
Quick question for either Laurie or Martha. Regarding the white dinnerware, is it just always reliable and sellable, do you think?
Always. Yeah. Always.
Okay.
Yep.
Laurie?
I make a lot of it. I'm putting together a new collection right now, and we don't have enough white. I just launched a pattern for someone in the January show, and we couldn't get the white right in Italy, and we ended up adding tin to the glaze to get the white right. So there's a lot going on with white.
And white is being used in our area as a background. A dinner plate will be white, or the charger will be white, and then there's color built on top of it. Frequently, that's the way tables are being set.
Interesting. Yeah. So the Cloudy Picture is a really great collaboration, and I don't have a slide just on collaborations, but you're going to see them. I saw Dolly Parton upstairs on the floor at Lifetime Brands, Drew Barrymore, you name it. This is her handle is Harlem Girl on Instagram, if you follow her, and that is a collection for Crate and Barrel. Sheila Bridges. She's a very famous designer. She did a toile. It looks like a French toile, but the patterns are all hallmarked areas in Harlem. She did a collection for Wedgwood about 3 years ago that's quite nice, and she's got a collection in Tiffany in their new dinnerware. The one thing you hold in your hand and put in your mouth the whole meal, flatware, it's just really fresh. Everything here is made in Europe, actually. On the left, you've got really vintage, big bowl to hold a big, bite of soup. The fork's pretty wide there. You have on the bottom the color. That's, again, Mepra from Italy. I think they really, really stretch when they want to do different finishes. The egg in the middle has a top to it, and it's called Mood. It's by Christoffel.
That's a personal favorite of mine. Not that I can afford it, but I have seen this firsthand around 10 years ago in New York, and it's even better in the flesh, isn't it?
Yeah, that's $1,000 for four-piece place setting in an egg in stainless steel, just to make a benchmark. I put it in here because it's the new canteen. That is the canteen of cutlery that people like. And you can leave these eggs sitting in your living room, use them, whatever. They do gold-plated and sterling and on, but that starter pack is $1,000 at retail. The white handles I thought were very fun with the copper. That's Herdmar, made in Portugal, family company. And the middle one with the orange handles down the side, I think that knife shape is getting really popular in restaurants and hotels, and people are bringing it into the home. And that's Cutipole, C-U-T-I-P-O-L, Cutipole. Lots of color. Barware fun. On the right, that's new by L'Objet. That is retailing at $48. I haven't seen a glass in those colors. I've seen chandeliers by Saint Louis mixing those colors, but he really went bold. Duralex in the middle, that is my favorite glass to get with water with my coffee in a cafe in France, and it's so famous, that pattern, and that they're doing it in color, even black, I think is kind of cool. Again, it's restaurant wear, but it's upstairs on the floor. You can put it in your store. You can use it in your home. And on the right, that's the bartender's best friend. That's by Riedel. If you see how the bottom of those rocks are, they stack in a bar. They stack. But that's actually a new introduction upstairs. You can see it at Riedel, and that is Triton. It is plastic, folks. The highest quality you can get, BPA-free, restaurant quality. I do want to talk about melamine. There's a lot going on this slide, and I'm so glad you brought this up with your kids. It made me smile. I'm going to address the photos first, the bottom two, and I know they're white, and I apologize for that. That's Vietri, Lastra. A Lastra is a mold that you make Parmesan cheese in, so you get a little I don't know, what's that, a shadow, or where the thing hooks together? And on the left, that is Lastra in Italian pottery, and that set retails for $713 as a set on Vietri.com. On the right, and I'm sorry that picture didn't come out, it's exactly a copy of Lastra that Vietri copied, and that set sells for $313, $400 cheaper. And you're seeing a company, I don't know, bastardize, should I say, one of their best-selling brands in another material, and it's still growing. There is a point. I'm not going to go through the points. You can read those. But melamine and plasticware has been growing at a faster pace than dinnerware sales lately, and why? It's fun. It's cheaper. You can sprinkle in. It's good for kids. But it's not just at the pool anymore. It's not just like Disney licensing. It looks real. Those glasses that are purple at the top are Mario Luca Gusti, and I can spell that. that looks like, I don't know, Marie Antoinette would have used it in the whatever century she lived in. So it looks real, and it's just affordable and not breakable.
The melamine sort of aspect, is that trending because people are dining out more in open spaces outside?
We thought it would. We thought it was going to be people outside on the patio. What we have discovered, it is people in the house who have tile floors and they don't want to drop something and break it.
Right.
It's people with children. It's elderly who have shakes and need to have something that is comfortable in their hand, that if they drop it, so what? It's lightweight. I mean, all those features, all of those things are what sell it. And it's beautiful now, and it doesn't look like the melamine that I knew as a child, which looked cheap.
It's amazing. If you look at it there, I know
yeah,
this is on the
luxury.
Screen. It doesn't look melamine, does it?
No. In fact, my staff, I have to admit, sometimes will interchange it, and we have a terrible time finding a piece because it's been interchanged. So, because it looks exactly the same.
Before I leave this slide, I just want to talk about sustainability, because we often think of melamine and plastics as not being sustainable. There's been a big leap forward in that industry. I think Tarhong upstairs on the floor and Jiue are leading the way. They are both huge factories in China, Taiwanese owned, in intermingling crushed bamboo, plant-based fibers, using recycled bottles. I think that you're going to see this for another couple of years in the materials that I mention here. And then I think that the word melamine is going to sunset. And that material is not going to be used anymore. It's going to be the three listed here and maybe others. I was just in Mexico City last week at a factory. They were looking at melamine from somewhere, and they were trying to crush aloe vera leftovers from, I don't know, making tequila or something. I was like, oh, that's like bamboo. Interesting, where you get your materials from. Yeah. So this is an amazing restaurant in London. I just wanted to change it up and talk about Horeca, which is a synonym for hotel, restaurant, and cafes, or hotels, restaurants, and catering, depending who you talk to. But you might see this word Horeca. People might tell you, why is that? It's stronger. People throw it in the dishwasher, they're using it all the time, and the shapes are kind of made for chefs, for inspiration. And I picked four here that I think have changed and speak to what our target market wants to buy. On the upper right, that is that Gabriel Kreuter's restaurant in New York. He does have the best tableware of any restaurant in the world, in my opinion. That fork is a right-handed fork. When you sit down, they watch you order and have a drink, and then they come and give you a right or left-handed fork. It is an experience. It's made by Vera Pure. She's an Austrian architect, actually. But look at the art that the plate is. Like, look at that little thing with the bread. Is that a soap dish? I'm not sure, but it is all artisanal. It's amazing. The bottom right was also sort of a groundbreaking collection that's by Jono Pandolfi. He is in Long Island City in New York. He studied at Skidmore, and that was commissioned for 11 Madison when they were voted the number one restaurant in the world. And he's done that in other colors, and you see it copied in that shape. But he really revolutionized and brought that shape out for 11 Madison. On the left bottom is a potter, Robert Gordon, out of Australia. This looks like the Nymphenburg that you showed earlier, but that's called Forager or something is the name of that pattern. And you see people foraging, and you hear chefs foraging for things, and I think that was genius that came out last year. The top right is a factory in Mexico. That is 100% recycled, both the glazes and the ceramic. They had to make those fingerprints in there to get the recycled glaze to look like someone would want to eat off of it. And the bottom of those dishes feel very like lava that's hardened.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's quite interesting about this slide in particular is that, for me, it goes back to the COVID pandemic, where we couldn't dine out, and then we were trying to replicate restaurants in our own homes. So people were investing in their tableware, buying additional pieces, buying better quality stuff, investing more. Do you think this trend's continued, Martha?
I do indeed.
Yeah.
It started with full force when everybody was eating at home, and we had difficulty, as did everyone else, with supply, trying to meet that demand was very, very hard, but it is still continuing. I've just had two excellent months in my store, and both of those months were strong, strong, strong in tabletop. It was just amazing. People setting up second homes, people who were tired of what they already have, young people trying to set up both Chinaware and melamine. It's amazing.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about what's next and try to turn this over here in a minute. What's next? So the five-piece place setting, it's really four. It's the dinner plate, the bowl, the 8 or 9 inch plate. I'm a 9 inch plate person, and the mug. And then people aren't buying the bread and butter plates, the 6 inches anymore, but they add them on to get a set of small plates, or when you're eating off a charcuterie or something like that. The bowl I've used at the bottom left as that's a 10-inch bowl. A dinner plate is 10 inches, by the way. That's it's deep. It holds pasta. It holds Chinese food. It holds a little bit of salad with a half a sandwich next to it. So when you're going to get food, you can put it in this bowl, wet or dry. FYI, this is made in America. It's Carmel Ceramica, Carmel, California. And that's a reactive glaze, which they're very good at. And then pastels. If you haven't been up on the floor, you're going to see pastels like crazy. I bring it up here because when these factories invest in new glazes and colors, it costs a lot of money. So when you see it coming out on these materials versus silicone or something, you know it's going to be trending. I'll just go around. The Czech teapots are Mackenzie Childs, and they are known for their black and white Czech teapots, just so you know. Pink was a surprise, but not a surprise. You have the dinner plate with the butterflies. That's Versace by Rosenthal. That particular pattern has gone through the kiln 12 times. It's very expensive. All of those different colors and finishes are fired at different temperatures. Top right, that is Paris Hilton for Walmart knife block. Notice the shape of the knife block. Very, very sensual, sexy. Yeah. Bottom right is Pottery Barn. And those are Italian glasses, but they are not Venetian. Notice the shape of the pink plate on the bottom. You're going to see shapes out of the edges of plates upstairs. Okay? And then the biggest surprise. I don't know if you guys go to gift shows, if you go to the Atlanta gift show, the Las Vegas gift show, the Dallas gift show, wherever you might go, but these brands, Dim Deco reminds me of mugs with teddy bears in them and throws. Tag always used to remind me of kitchen towels and hot pads. Creative Co-op reminded me of seasonal. I would go there to buy Christmas, Easter, you name it. Beatrix Ball, she came out with medals years ago from Mexico, the hot, cold, and freezer, and to the table. And what I'm seeing in those brands, they will surprise you. They have become lifestyle brands, and they are dedicating space to tabletop. Karma on the lower left is kind of a tabletop brand. They might be showing in the show. They were here last year. They're owned by Stephen Joseph Gifts out of Texas. These two photos, if there's anyone from Tag in the room, hi, they're yours. You probably recognize them. The one in the middle left, thank you for coming. That is all melamine, folks. It is beautiful. The shapes of those bowls. I lived in Asia for 18 years. I will eat my noodles and rice out of those bowls. They are amazing. Go pick them up and touch them. And the picture on the right, I was talking to the Tag folks that are in the room, and I like black and white. And I took a picture of this because it was black and white. And as I was preparing for today, I noticed all the tableware on that table. And it really shows you that, you know, depending on which cocktail party you're at, Tag could tell people they're a tabletop company, a lifestyle company. Just really, as retailers, you have so many resources, is my point. Okay, opportunities for retailers. First thing I'm going to say is go seek and find what's right for you. And Martha's going to talk about how she does that in a minute. But attend shows. Use your sales rep as your partner. Maybe use Faire.com or other online ordering sites. I've not met a retailer that hasn't tried it, and I usually ask. travel and discover, know artisans from your area, host pop-up community events, go to them to seek and find product. These are all just ideas as retailers of where you can find things that might be unique and good for you in your store. On the left, we talked about storied factory brands. We talked about designed brands. We talked about melamine. With Prop 65, that's a pretty big deal right now. And I think there's only two factories in the world right now that are still making leaded crystal, but they're not really, one of them is ascending to the US, ICA. Look for lines that give you a higher margin. There's going to be lower prices out there this year. That is my biggest surprise. So definitely check with your sales reps and your brands. Ask what have you got that's a lower price. We talked about leeway earlier, those starter sets or starter sets plus. It's something that you can buy mix and match and then create it in your store, but it might be something that your brands will do for you. And I've done a lot of research just talking with buyers this year, and those that are holding inventory are selling it. Delivery is number one. If you can't get it to the customer, you can't sell it. Mm-hmm. And then the suppliers in the room. Get on the road. I'm talking on the right first. Discover new stores, discover new clients. If you get an online order, follow up. That's a prospect for you to write bigger orders. There's so much going on social media right now. Paul mentioned earlier, who did you say to follow?
Wedgwood.
And you can find new opportunities, new colors that are out there, new shapes, new whatever, and exhibit at shows and try new shows. On the right, these are what's trending out there for suppliers. There are new independents opening. I will tell you, we have a store in the room today that isn't quite open, and they're here buying for the first time ever, so thank you for being here. This is true because there's one of them in the room. Garden center is really hot, adding gift and tabletop. Seeing a lot of bookstores opening across America in small towns. Interior designers are opening retail stores in their garage and their studios. That's been trending a couple of years, but I'm seeing more of that. Online suppliers have assets for your retailers. Get them up, get them to them, have easy passwords. Just give a seamless omni-channel to your retailer and your consumer. That's so easy. And because we're here talking about tabletop, I didn't want to ignore the bridal registry business. The Knot and Zola, they are still killing it. Jung Lee's bridal registry in New York is killing it. Wedding list sales are up, but people are curating them. And go on, hit somebody, pick Mary and Bill and see what they're, Bill and Bill, whatever, and see what they've registered for, and you might find an opportunity for yourself. Okay, Paul and I had a little fun talking about our favorite stores. I'm going to start because I have the microphone. I love World Market. If you're not selling World Market, if you haven't been to one, they are, since they were spun off from Bed Bath & Beyond, they are really merchandising well. They have 239 stores in America. Sabi Asashi, if you haven't been there in New York, this is an Indian designer. He really makes couture clothing for Indian weddings. He's from Chennai. His stores are theater. The props, the music, the salespeople, the product, the custom area, the area that you can buy something to go. Walk through those stores. Follow him on Instagram. His stores are amazing. The new Crate and Barrel in the Flatiron District in New York is a must-see store. Do not miss it. It will make you want to shop there almost as much as when they had one here on Michigan Avenue. There was a story that when you came to the houseware show in Chicago, it was more important to go to Crate and Barrel than come to the show. So when they closed that, you know, yeah. I'm going to go down my list till I get to you. The Oxford Exchange in Tampa, Florida is amazing. Follow them, go and visit, eat there, shop there, buy tabletop there. The Blueprint store in Dallas, it's one of my favorites because they stock a lot of tableware, not gonna lie. But that is two architects that they bought two houses and they put a breezeway between them, and the houses are the store, thus the name Blueprint. Jung Lee, who I mentioned earlier, we talked earlier, she does a lot of events and she holds a lot of product, and her wedding registry is great, and she's just remodeled her small store in New York to hold small events. I like that she's moving and shaking.
I'm moving on. Carl Davi in Berlin. I was invited to this store by good friends of mine at Zuiselglas, who hosted an event there for their anniversary. And oh my God, the store is absolutely stunning. It's like the Harrods of Berlin. It's absolutely, it's just amazing. I was so impressed. Obviously, Harrods London, that's a beautiful store. Dom Forfora, Moscow, unfortunately, we can't go there, but it's a beautiful store in its own right, sells some beautiful brands. Certain John Lewis stores in the UK I'm really impressed with, really, really, really nice. From a tabletop offering, is an amazing selection. Replacements, I've never actually been there, but I follow them on Instagram.
Fabulous.
That's very, very impressive.
They just had their 40th anniversary. If you don't know Replacements or replacements.com or Bob Page, the founder, he's an amazing guy. And it's just one of my stores, favorite stores, because they stock a lot of tableware and their sales teams are so knowledgeable.
Pusud Meister from Kiev actually is the Tableware International Geo nominee this year. Beautiful, beautiful store. Again, follow them on Instagram. Absolutely amazing. Despite all the problems over there, they're still trading, which is unbelievable. Ital Design in Baku. I've never been there, but the photos, oh my, again, just breathtaking, really. Rustin's Philippines, very contemporary, looks beautiful. Sells many sort of contemporary tableware brands. Borough Kitchen in London, very good sort of up and coming store. Great tabletop selection. Brown Thomas Dublin, obviously, again very, very impressive. Will sell all the household names. And Parousiase Greece, I'd like to give a special mention to, because the way they operate in a tough economy has been superb. But my favourite of all is the extra ingredient from Greensboro. North Carolina, which is Martha's.
We've got about 6 minutes left, and Paul is going to rapid fire some questions to Martha. I'm going to flick through and let you see some pictures of her store while they're talking. And if you have any questions at the end, we'll be around.
Martha, this is probably, I thought about this, yes, this is probably the most interesting question for me to ask you. If you were on the other side of the fence, so if you were working as a tableware supplier, what would you do, if anything, differently to support your retail partners?
To support my retail partners, I would be sure I was in stock, for one thing, because my retail partners can't sell if they don't have product. It's helpful sometimes to have, always helpful to have a freight program. That is something that is extremely comfortable for me, to be able to help with that. The margin in tabletop is excellent.
Yep.
If it can get better, that would be wonderful.
Yep.
So those are a couple things.
Yeah. Okay. Have you ever bought tableware products for your store solely without picking them up first? I.e., have you seen something online and bought it from a brand, or do you have to feel it, touch it first?
I am much more comfortable picking it up and feeling it and touching it.
Which is hence the importance of trade shows for you.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I do sell, I do have a website. The Extra Ingredient has a website. We do find that we sell more tabletop on that website to people who have been in the store and have picked it up.
Wow. Okay.
It's amazing.
And can you tell us some of the tableware stores or homeware stores that you love?
The Extra Ingredient, of course, is number one. You had a great list, and I thought, oh, I need that slide because there are a lot of places that I would like to go.
Yeah, but the other day on the Zoom call, you mentioned Liberty. That wasn't on there. I mean,
no, that wasn't on there, but that was a long time ago. That was my ancient history when I was not a retailer, and I was actually in school in London and went there and studied fabric design. So that was a totally different world. But, yes, that is a wonderful, wonderful store. Replacements is in Greensboro, North Carolina, so at some point they are a little bit competitive with what I do,
right.
But they are a huge, huge business, and their biggest push is for people who are collecting and trying to fulfill whatever they've already got, and you can call them up with your pattern, you can go online with your pattern, they can search it out for you, which is a really nice resource. So we have people who come to Greensboro simply for a visit to the replacement store. And it's a tremendous operation, and you can actually take a tour there. So I've had customers who have been there, taken a tour, and then shop with me.
Wow.
It's kind of interesting.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And what's the biggest challenge for a retailer selling tabletop at this time?
Whew, the biggest challenge is that tabletop for my store, I would call myself a kitchenware store. I started out in housewares, so that thus I was here at the housewares show, and then I moved into tabletop. So the biggest challenge, I think, is that tabletop is a slower turn.
Right.
Houseware is a much, much faster turn. Lots and lots of items go through. Tabletop's slower, but the margin is better.
That is quite interesting because I think it was Denby who did some market research around 10 years ago, and their research was in the average person's lifetime, they will replace their dinnerware 3 times, which is quite astounding, really, how you're expecting some people to buy it, you know.
I would think that has changed, and it's more now.
Really?
Because of the lifestyle that we lead, because of what you said in your slides earlier, that we eat in front of the television, we eat everywhere. I mean, because not only is this tabletop, but there's paper tabletop as well.
Yeah.
And I sell a lot of that. I'm finding people use that.
Yep.
Frequently, they set their table, they eat their dinner at their table, but then their dessert's in front of the television on a paper plate.
Yeah.
So that's a whole nother version of... Yeah. Of tabletop.
And from your point of view, what do you see as the opportunities for retailers who sell tabletop?
From a houseware store's viewpoint, I think it's a natural adjunct. You are already teaching people to cook. Many of my friends have cooking schools. They're already teaching cooking. They're already talking about eating. The best way to do this, the most efficient way to cook. So the next avenue is, how are we going to serve it? How are we going to make it look nice? How are we going to set our table? I see that happening all the time.
I'll just round up quickly. Are you inspired when you go to a restaurant when you see a lovely sort of table
always,
setting? Yeah?
Always. We're the worst. We pick the dishes up and turn them over to see whose they are. We're terrible.
Please, Lori.
So we're under 2 minutes, and I don't know if you guys realize this, but Martha is part of a buying group called the Gourmet Catalog. And Martha, can you tell us what that buying group is, why you joined, what's good about it, what's not good about it?
Originally we joined because it was called Gourmet Catalog, and they actually published a catalog that we mailed out. Back in the days of mailing catalogs, we did this. And it was it has now morphed into more of a buying group because they are no longer publishing catalogs. We actually started publishing our own, but we have stopped that as well. But the GC buying group is a great opportunity for networking with other stores. It's a wonderful way to have the GC staff work with a vendor in order to negotiate terms for us, discounts for us. If I have a problem and I can't seem to get through to the vendor, I can call that office and ask them to go to bat for me. There are a lot of advantages to that. The biggest advantage, though, is the networking of other stores that are very similar to mine. We can share ideas, we can share knowledge without being competitive. And that is just fabulous.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say thank you. We're running a little bit over.
Yep, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you.
Thanks, and thank you for coming, and please thank our panelists.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you.
Enjoyed it.